This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
This is an In Cahoots partner podcast on Rabble.ca. Now listen to these guys. They're in cahoots with us.
This is Matt Adams, your host today. Here is a surprisingly uplifting topic, taxes and taxation. That's right, I said it. Taxes can be uplifting. If you do them right, there is less pain and more gain for everyone. Yet the story we hear from the government and much of the media is that taxes are rotten and evil. Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper famously once said, quote, "I don't believe any taxes are good taxes," unquote, and he then proceeded to create deficits with tax cuts. Now a new book gives another view, The Great Revenue Robbery, How to Stop the Tax Cut Scam and Save Canada. This book was edited by Richard Swift for the Canadians for Tax Fairness. Today I spoke with Dennis Howlett. He is a contributor to The Great Revenue Robbery, and he's the executive director of the Canadians for Tax Fairness. Here we go. So Dennis's book seems to me in part to be a reflection and maybe an impetus, a push towards the change that people are having around how they talk and think about taxation. Is that fair?
Yeah, in many ways, this book, The Great Revenue Robbery, is our platform, if you like, of Canadians for Tax Fairness. And our goals are really to get a progressive point of view out there in terms of taxes. For too long, the tax debate has been monopolized by right-wing tax cutters. They've sold a whole bill of goods in terms of tax cuts are going to be good to stimulate the economy. It will give you more money in your pocket. All these kinds of arguments that have proven to be wrong. Tax cuts to the corporations actually have not helped stimulate the economy. They have not helped employment. Most of the money has been just taken away by companies overseas, because so much of our economy is foreign-owned, or it's just sitting there not being invested because companies aren't sure about what's happening with the economy. So really, it hasn't worked.
And then we've been seeing in the news that you mentioned offshore, like there's been a lot of news about tax havens, and you folks have talked about that. You're a bit ahead of the game on that. And now it's sort of the scandal of the time is this huge global tax haven phenomena, too, which has an impact on Canada, right?
Well, it's amazing how taxes have become such a hot issue. And hopefully there will be a lot of people interested in reading our book, because it's one of the very few books available that discusses a variety of tax-related issues from a progressive point of view. And we really put forward the idea that taxes are almost any progressive goals people have, whether it's ensuring quality health care, or improving the quality and accessibility of our education system, poverty reduction, making progress on climate change and environmental goals. All these things are going to require government action and revenues sufficient to do the job. And right now, because of all the tax cuts in the past, governments just don't have the capacity to do the job they need to do in order to ensure a better society, economy, and environment.
But it seems to me a lot of them have actually done that intentionally. I mean, that was certainly the movement out of the United States. They called it starving the beast. You know, they want to cut and burn and slash, except for military, et cetera, in order to weaken government because they don't seem to believe in government. That seems to be something that's going on here, too, with the Harper people. They believe in some sort of, as Richard Swift calls it, fantasy markets in the book, a term I like quite a bit.
Yeah, they think that private enterprise can do the whole thing. But in fact, They can't provide the same quality of education or health care at the price that a public system can. And for retirement, you're far better off pooling your retirement savings, if you like, through your taxes, rather than trying to set up a private retirement plan. Because if you do it privately, you have to save enough just in case you live to be 100. Whereas if you pool all the, and that's a huge amount you would need if you're going to retire at 65. Most people can't save enough to cover them and if they happen to live to be 100. The only way really, realistically, most people can do that is part of a public plan. So things like Canada Pension Plan, Old Age Security, we all pay for that through, you know, our deductions and taxes, and it's a good deal. It still is a good deal, even, you know, with some of the erosion of quality we've seen in terms of healthcare and education because of cutbacks and tax cuts. It's still a good deal and a much better deal to try to provide that publicly rather than privately.
But then why do we always hear the other side? It's this mantra of, you know, deficit cut, taxes are always evil, it's a necessary evil, is the best you'll get sometimes in the news. Why is that always the story?
Because there are private vested interests who want to make a lot of money providing the goods and services that traditionally government has provided. A lot of money to be made in privatized healthcare. It's hugely profitable in the United States. Private insurance companies there make a killing, but that's precisely the point. One of the reasons it's way more expensive in the United States is because they have to provide for their own profit. And that's a big chunk of money that we just don't, you know, have in the case of Canada, and the reason why our healthcare costs are almost half of what they are in the United States. So you've got to really pay attention to who is behind those arguing for tax cuts and a greater role for the private sector. It's usually a private corporate interest.
And then, so one thing you say in the book, that austerity is a very bitter pill to swallow, and use a phrase like more grind if you understand it's the wrong medicine for an ailing economy. So what austerity measures, like what's the alternative to the austerity measures that will work in the minds of your organization?
You have to analyze is, you know, how did we get into the deficit situation that we're into? When Mr. Harper became prime minister, he had a $13 billion surplus that he inherited. Now, he had one of his, you know, most important goals was to dismantle the Canadian welfare state. He thinks it's evil. But he actually had a case for cutting health care, Medicare, when there was a huge surplus. In fact, it was clear not only could we afford the social programs we had, but there was fiscal room to actually add some more, like a daycare program or a pharmacare plan or a national housing strategy. And so one of the things that Harper set out right away was to get rid of that surplus as fast as he could. And the way he did that was the GST tax cuts and then the corporate tax cuts and other boutique tax cuts. And pretty soon he had got rid of that deficit, and they were well on their way to eliminating the surplus, rather, even before the global economic crisis struck in 2008. And once he had the deficit, then he could argue we've got to have austerity. But why do we have the deficit in the first place? It's because of tax cuts. So if we want to get at the root cause, we need to roll back those tax cuts. And that's a better way to deal with our deficit than the austerity, because austerity actually has lowered our GNP by 1% or more. We're Our projection now is 1.5% growth this year, which is anemic. And if government had, instead of austerity, reversed the corporate tax cuts, the money wasn't doing any good anyway. So have the government take it back, invest it, open the tap a little bit in terms of stimulus spending. That would create jobs far better than tax cuts to corporations. And if you lower the unemployment rate, that's also going to raise revenue for governments. And it may take a little bit longer to get rid of the deficit that way, but it's going to be less painful, and you're going to avoid triggering another recession, which we're on the verge of going back into recession again. Several governments in Europe, like the UK, have done exactly that. Their austerity approach has pushed them back into recession, and that has lowered revenue, and it's actually compounded their deficit problem. So it's not a solution. It's painful medicine that's not going to work for us.
And then there's this notion in Canada and in the U.S. that Canada is this big tax country and that our tax rates are so high, but in fact our corporate taxes are lower than they are in the U.S. Isn't that true?
That's right. Corporate tax rates are 10% lower than the U.S. Generally in Canada, provincial and federal corporate taxes put together are 25%. In the U.S., it's 35%. In fact, when I was in Washington a year ago, Congress people I met there were saying Canada is on the verge of becoming a tax haven. So I would accept that, you know, you can't raise corporate tax rates too far above other major trading partners. It has to, you know, you can't get too out of line. But there's lots of room there now. We could raise our corporate tax rates and still be quite competitive.
And then what about taking on beyond the sort of traditional notion of the traditional sort of economy of GNP and GDP and corporate taxes and marginal tax rates? What about issues facing us with the climate crisis? Like, what are ways that taxes can help us address the challenges that we're going to face with that?
Well, this is part of our book. Is there are a number of chapters on different tax topics, and we try to show that taxes can address a number of social problems that we face. It's a good instrument to deal with poverty, for example. It can help redistribute wealth, and it can help deal with climate change. In the book, Joe Gunn has written a chapter about environmental taxes, and he argues that one of the most effective ways to reduce greenhouse gases would be to have a carbon tax. It's working very well in BC. There is public support for it in BC, which is a tax-adverse province. Remember, they're the ones who had a referendum and, you know, wanted to reverse the provincial government's decision to have a harmonized sales tax. So even there, there is public support for a carbon tax.
And how does the carbon tax work in BC?
Well, it's a fairly well, it's not perfect. I'd tweak it a little bit more, but it's a well-designed plan. And in that, it's it has tax rebates to low-income BC people so that the carbon tax doesn't become a burden for low-income people. And it acknowledges that they have less capacity to change their behavior, but also they have a much smaller carbon footprint.
Well, what is actually taxed?
Well, there's a tax on all forms of energy, of things that produce greenhouse gases. And it has introduced it in a gradual way. So, but it's up to a level now that is actually having a positive impact in terms of encouraging greenhouse gases. So you tax the bad, and you use some of that money that you raise from carbon taxes to support creating alternatives like public transit. Some of it is rebated back to low-income BC citizens. But overall, it rewards good behavior, which is a good thing to do. It's much more straightforward than a cap and trade system, for example, which is open to some abuse. There are some sketchy carbon reduction schemes out there that get traded. The Europeans have done a cap and trade system, and there have been problems with that. If some of those problems were fixed, possibly a combination of cap and trade and carbon tax would work. The cap and trade can work for major emitters. It's more problematic to extend it across the economy. But so there are options on how we could actually achieve our greenhouse gas reduction targets. And it's very hard to see any way to get there without carbon taxes being at least part of the mix.
And then Joe Gunn also suggested, I think in that chapter, removing the subsidy for, I guess there's tax subsidies for oil and gas and energy production itself.
That's right. Canada actually committed at the G20 to eliminating subsidies for carbon intensive energy. They did reduce them. About maybe a third of the subsidies that were in place have been eliminated, but we still have about $1 billion a year of subsidy going to the oil and gas industry, which doesn't make sense. And removing those subsidies not only would help us in terms of climate change, but it would create revenue that are useful things like investment in public transit.
And then the there's also a talk about the financial transaction tax, which at one point was called Tobin tax. Some people know it as a sort of a Robin Hood tax, where you tax major financial transactions, usually done by corporations. That there's work on that in Europe. Is there any progress on that in Canada?
Well, the Conservative government has been really almost ideological in its opposition to that tax, but it really has gained momentum in Europe because of the global economic crisis and the fact that one of the causes of that was the speculative trading on a whole variety of, you know, derivatives and various financial instruments. You know, there are all kinds of things in addition to stocks and commodities that get traded now, and especially the high volume trading, you know, the split second computer trading, which is very very damaging to the economy when some of those automatic systems kick in. So the idea behind this is it's a very small tax, 0.05% on trades. And it's actually in Europe, they're applying slightly different rates to different kinds of instruments. But it would hardly be noticeable for people who buy a stock and then hold it for, you know, several years. It really would be nothing at all. But for those that trade, you know, by the minute, because the tax gets added each time there is a transaction, it does discourage that kind of speculative trading, which would help stabilize markets. But in the course of that, it also would raise a significant amount of revenue. And the proposal is that this be applied to funding climate change adaptation and mitigation in the developing countries and to poverty reduction in developing countries. We've seen many governments reduce their aid budget. Canada is doing that. And so many countries in the South are really hard put to try to fund their health and other poverty reduction programs. And so this would be a new source for funding those things. So again, it's a tax that helps prevent speculation in the markets, but raises revenue to do a number of very socially useful things.
And the book has 8 chapters plus an introduction and a conclusion. And it's The Great Revenue Robbery, How to Stop the Tax Cut Scam and Save Canada, edited by Richard Swift for the Canadians for Tax Fairness.